Chapter 7. To her resolute nature, however, after all these years, the savage and uncompromising sincerity of purpose shown by her Malay kinsman seemed at last preferable to the sleek hypocrisy, to the polite disguises, to the virtuous pretenses of such white people as she had had the misfortune to come in contact with. After all, it was her life. It was going to be her life, and so thinking, she fell more and more under the influence of her mother. Seeking, in her ignorance, a better side to that life, she listened with avidity to the old woman's tales of the departed glories of the Rajas, from whose race he had sprung, and she became gradually more indifferent, more contemptuous of the white side of her descent represented by a feeble and traditionless father. Almayer's difficulties were by no means diminished by the girl's presence in Sambor. The stir caused by her arrival had died out, it is true, and Lakamba had not renewed his visits. But about a year after the departure of the man-of-war boats, the nephew of Abdullah, Said Rashid, returned from his pilgrimage to Mecca, rejoicing in a green jacket and the proud title of Haji. There was a great letting off of rockets on board the steamer which brought him in, and a great beating of drums all night in Abdullah's compound, while the feast of welcome was prolonged far into the small hours of the morning. Rashid was the favorite nephew and heir of Abdullah, and that loving uncle, meeting Almayer one day by the riverside, stopped politely to exchange civilities, and to ask solemnly for an interview. Almayer suspected some attempt at a swindle, or at any rate something unpleasant, but of course consented with a great show of rejoicing. Accordingly, the next evening, after sunset, Abdullah came, accompanied by several other greybeards, and by his nephew. That young man of a very rakish and dissipated appearance affected the greatest indifference as to the whole of the proceedings. When the torchbearers had grouped themselves below the steps, and the visitors had seated themselves on various lame chairs, Rashid stood apart in the shadow, examining his aristocratically small hands with great attention. Almayer, surprised by the great solemnity of his visitors, perched himself on the corner of the table with a characteristic want of dignity quickly noted by the Arabs with grave disapproval. But Abdullah spoke now, looking straight past Almayer at the red curtain hanging in the doorway, where a slight tremor disclosed the presence of women on the other side. He began by neatly complimenting Almayer upon the long years they had dwelt together in cordial neighborhood, and called upon Allah to give him many more years, to gladden the eyes of his friends by his welcome presence. He made a polite allusion to the great consideration shown him, Almayer, by the Dutch Amissi, and drew thence the flattering inference of Almayer's great importance amongst his own people. He, Abdullah, was also important amongst all the Arabs, and his nephew Rashid would be heir of that social position, and of great riches. Now Rashid was a Haji. He was possessor of several Malay women, went on Abdullah, but it was time he had a favorite wife, the first of the four allowed by the Prophet. And, speaking with well-bred politeness, he explained further to the dumbfounded Almayer that, if he would consent to the alliance of his offspring with that true believer and virtuous man Rashid, she would be the mistress of all the splendors of Rashid's house, and first wife of the first Arab in the islands, when he, Abdullah, was called to the joys of paradise by Allah the All-Merciful. Uno, Tuan, he said, in conclusion, the other women would be her slaves, and Rashid's house is great. From Bombay he has brought great divans, and costly carpets, and European furniture. There is also a great looking glass in a frame shining like gold. What could a girl want more? And while Almayer looked upon him in silent dismay, Abdullah spoke in a more confidential tone, waving his attendants away, and finished his speech by pointing out the material advantages of such an alliance, and offering to settle upon Almayer $3,000 as a sign of his sincere friendship, and the price of the girl. Poor Almayer was nearly having a fit. Burning with the desire of taking Abdullah by the throat, he had but to think of his helpless position in the midst of lawless men, to comprehend the necessity of diplomatic conciliation. He mastered his impulses, and spoke politely and coldly, saying the girl was young, and as the apple of his eye. Tun Rishid, a faithful and a haji, would not want an infidel woman in his harem, and, seeing Abdullah smile skeptically at that last objection, he remained silent, not trusting himself to speak more, not daring to refuse point blank, nor yet to say anything compromising. Abdullah understood the meaning of that silence, and rose to take leave with a grave salam. He wished his friend Almayr a thousand years, and moved down the steps, helped dutifully by Rishid. The torchbearers shook their torches, scattering a shower of sparks into the river, and the cortege moved off, leaving Almayr agitated, but greatly relieved by their departure. He dropped into a chair, and watched the glimmer of the lights amongst the tree trunks till they disappeared, and complete silence succeeded the tramp of feet and the murmur of voices. He did not move till the curtain rustled, and Nina came out on the veranda, and sat in the rocking chair, where she used to spend many hours every day. She gave a slight rocking motion to her seat, leaning back with half-closed eyes, her long hair shading her face from the smoky light of the lamp on the table. Almayr looked at her furtively, but the face was as impassible as ever. She turned her head slightly towards her father, and, speaking, to his great surprise, in English, asked, "Was that Abdullah here?" "Yes," said Almayr Ustgon. "And what did he want, father?" "He wanted to buy you for Rishid," answered Almayr, brutally, his anger getting the better of him, and looking at the girl, as if in expectation of some outbreak of feeling. But Nina remained apparently unmoved, gazing dreamily into the black night outside. "Be careful, Nina," said Almayr, after a short silence and rising from his chair, "when you go paddling alone into the creeks in your canoe. That Rishid is a violent scoundrel, and there is no saying what he may do. Do you hear me?" She was standing now, ready to go in, one hand grasping the curtain in the doorway. She turned round, throwing her heavy tresses back by a sudden gesture. "Do you think he would dare?" she asked, quickly, and then turned again to go in, adding in a lower tone, "He would not dare. Arabs are all cowards." Almayr looked after her, astonished. He did not seek the repose of his hammock. He walked the floor absently, sometimes stopping by the balustrade to think. The lamp went out. The first streak of dawn broke over the forest. Almayr shivered in the damp air. "I give it up," he muttered to himself, lying down wearily. "Damn those women." Well, if the girl did not look as if she wanted to be kidnapped. And he felt a nameless fear creep into his heart, making him shiver again. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.